As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Joining us now via the Rude Guest Hotline is our friend Mr. Barry Svrluga. Barry, are you currently still in Augusta?
I am in my home in Washington, the District of Columbia.
Okay, great. When did you leave this morning?
Left this morning, easy flight from Columbia, back by noon.
Okay, great.
How was the time down there?
Yeah.
Whoa, man. I mean, it's a lot to get your arms around. Like, those weeks are always great. JP, you know they're fun. Like, any day at that place in any situation is fun. I know there's recency bias, but that feels like an all-timer yesterday for a bunch of reasons, the way it played out, but certainly the character that brought it home. This is one of these where I kind of process, okay, what are the top five things I've seen live and what would rank ahead of that? And I'm working through that project right now.
It's funny. We actually discussed this. I don't know. Shane Bacon, you probably know him. Had a really good tweet about what ranks similarly to that in the last 20 years. And it was like the Red Sox finally getting past the Yankees, stuff like that. It was Tiger, honestly, in 2019 at Augusta. Kind of where do you think that ranks as you work your way through it? Maybe you don't know exactly yet, but where does it seem like?
Yeah, it's up there, and it's because it's very much like the Red Sox in 04 or the Cubs in 2016. And that's in my conversation, that 16 Cubs game 7 breaking the curse. I covered that because of what Rory had been through. I put in the first paragraph of my column this morning, a quote that Jack Nicklaus said in 2015. And that it was basically like, don't worry about Rory. He's going to win plenty of Masters. He's going to win lots more majors. Just kind of leave him alone. And a decade later, like, that was not true. And that was not true because he lost his game, which happens to people. Like, people have hot streaks and they win majors, and then it's like, oh, I can't figure this out again, and they never capture it again. And that's golf in part. But this guy has spent the bulk of that 10 years being the best player on the planet, with some blips and a little bit of inconsistencies. But you know, he's won the Players, he's won the FedEx Cup, he's won everything else there is to win except a major, and this was the one that he needed to win the Grand Slam. And so when he walks into his press conference yesterday, he opens it by saying, hey, I'm going to start this thing with a question for you guys. What are we going to talk about next year? Because it was always, can you get it done? How have you prepared? What's your mentality around here? So all of those layers, JP, I mean, I can list the things it's contending with, but it is a strong contender for top five things I've seen and covered live.
It's got to be. And to think you and I were sitting in Long Island, whatever, 10 days ago, watching Alex Ovechkin break Wayne Gretzky's goal record, right? And then to have this right after that is just so significant. And the thing that I stand by, the quote that has stuck with me I read this Bamberger book a couple weeks ago called Men in Green, and it's about like famous people in golf, some that you've heard of, some that you've never heard of. And I can't remember who said it first. I want to say maybe it was Hogan or Palmer, but a quote that became something that Tiger Woods started to use a lot was basically, life isn't about what you achieve, it's about what you overcome. Mm. And I feel like that's the only way Rory was going to win that, in that just absurd, chaotic way.
Yeah, and that speaks to his whole career. I mean, it's very easy to kind of make a single day a microcosm of something else, but I don't think it's a stretch in this instance. I mean, you know, he makes the boneheaded play into 13 in the water after making probably two pretty smart shots. Like, that's a disappointment he had to overcome, and then rip the 7-iron into the 15th green. That's just as good a golf shot as you're ever gonna see. Apply that to what he's overcome by winning the Masters, like all the putts he missed at St. Andrews on a day that he struck the ball well and lost to Cam Young, who roared from behind with a 64. Like the two tiny missed putts late on the back nine of the U.S. Open last year that allowed Bryson DeChambeau to pass him with a great up and down on the 18th. Like, the mistakes he made yesterday and the opportunities that had slipped away in the past are so analogous. And, you know, in the end, like, he stepped up on 18 and hit as good a wedge in there as you can hit. You can't tell me if he had hit that to 10 feet that he was going to make it. He had to hit it to two because he was such a bundle of nerves.
Right.
But that's also like part of what makes him such an intriguing character is like, he admits it. He's human. He's vulnerable. Like, that's cost him in the past. And it was just such a relief for him. And I think for golf, because the storyline changed yesterday that he did hit it to 2 feet and he was able to trickle it in. And the Grand Slam, you know, it's a short list, man. It's now a 6-man club. The names that are not on it, Arnold Palmer and Tom Watson and Lee Trevino, are just as staggering as the ones that are on it. And Rory is now on it, which is amazing.
So I had to look that up last night. B-Mitch, do you know? So Palmer is not in the Grand Slam club. Do you know which major he didn't win?
Arnold Palmer?
Yeah. I found this surprising.
Masters?
The PGA.
PGA.
I could be incorrect, but that kind of seems like the easiest one. I don't know if you agree with that, Barry.
It's the one with the, you know, the setup doesn't distinguish itself. It has a bunch of club pros in it, in the field. So, you know, they like to say by world rankings, it's the strongest field of the year. But it's not like the U.S. Open where you're like, you know, that somewhere between, you know, 2 under and 1 over is probably going to win. Like, the PGA feels more, of all the majors, it feels most like a regular tour stop. But you're right. I mean, that, you know, that fact that he never has to answer that again. And the other thing I think is his relationship with Augusta National could really change now. He's always played the course well and always made some pretty significant mistakes. But now he knows he's coming back there for the rest of his life. He knows that on Tuesday night of Masters Week, he's not looking for a reservation or having his chef cook something back at the rental house.
Right.
Like, he's going to the champions dinner. And that's got to be so freeing, because that's the one of all the golf majors, the one that changes your life the most is the Masters, because you're in the field for as long as you want to be in the field. And you have that dinner date on Tuesday of Masters Week that very, very few people have. It would be a shame if Danny Willett had that date for the rest of his life and Rory McIlroy didn't.
Yeah.
But, like, he was the first guy with that many doubles to win the tournament there. He did some great things. He did some awful things along the way, which means his great things had to be even better to be able to still hoist the trophy and win it.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Brian. Like, the way he would get better there would be, like, he could have won that tournament by 8 shots without even, like, without a stretch. Like,
right.
Even if you allow him the double at where did he double on? He doubled 15 on Thursday.
Even if
you allow him that one, the sloppy one was the double at 17. Like, that was just like, my brain has left. I'm just not concentrating on each shot. Like, make that a bogey. Like, eliminate the double on 13, which there's no way that wedge should go in the water. The double at one, he admitted, was all nerves. Like, he just was a wreck. And it almost, like, calmed him because he was like, okay, I've made that mistake. I can get it out. You've tapped into something here, Brian, because he's so good that he can overcome mistakes that basically nobody else could overcome, because he's got that shot at 15. He's got that shot at 17, where it's just such a tough hole to bogey. I mean, I'm sorry, to birdie, and he birdied it when he needed it. It's all in there, and I don't even think in winning this one, like, he really put it all together, because he had such egregious mistakes and because he was so wobbly. Maybe winning this one frees up his mind, reminds him how good he is, reminds him that he can summon those shots in those key situations. And I mean, the next major is the PGA at Quail Hollow,
which he loves.
He won his first PGA Tour title there. He loves that place. It sets up for him perfectly. The British Open is in Portrush in Northern Ireland, like down the road from his hometown. Now, he missed the cut there the last time, but I'm not sitting here telling you that Rory McIlroy is going to win another major this year or five more majors the rest of his career, but it'll be really interesting to see what was unlocked emotionally and mentally by getting it done finally at Augusta.
The shots marry over the trees. Not many people, even pro level, can get that ball up that quick.
Stone.
Because his swing speed and ball speed is ridiculous.
It's so, I was there on Saturday at 7. And you know, JP, you just kind of have to luck into finding yourself at the right place at the right time at Augusta. And if you hang in with a group, you're going to. It's going to happen. And so on Saturday, he hits it right of 7. And, you know, people are gathered around the ball and they give him a lane and the marshals are there, and there's no conflict. It's just like, we're going to watch what happens. And I'm looking low, like, okay, can he snake it around this tree? Like, can he hit a cut around that tree low, bounce it up and maybe split the two bunkers? Or if he ends up in the bunker, like, no big deal. He can make it up and down, or the worst he's going to do is make bogey. Not that big of a deal. All of a sudden he's like looking up. And I'm going, what are you talking about? Up. And people like start pointing, like, you know, because you can't really, you can't scream it, but you're like looking at your friends, like, he's looking up and he's talking to Harry, his caddy. And damned if he doesn't pull, I don't even know what he pulled. I think it was an 8-iron, opens up the face. And you talk about swing speed or club head speed, Brian, like, it's a violent motion at that time. Like, he is coming down on that ball. And the thing looked like it shot up in an elevator shaft, and then it carried left of the green. Like, it didn't seem, not just by like a human, but just by physics. Like, I didn't think a ball could get up that fast and then carry that far. And he made an amazing, amazing par. He did it on the other side of the fairway, the seventh fairway on Sunday. But just physically, he's an extraordinary, extraordinary golfer.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy, because I don't know that people realize when you see him in person. I mean,
he's tiny.
He's 5'8",
5'9". Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Dude, going back to Royal Portrush, so that's where the British is this year. And I remember when it was there a couple of years back where he didn't make the cut. Remember, he started poorly and then say he shot a 75 and then a 66 and missed it by one. Imagine the pressure he felt then with this, hadn't won a major streak going, and then it's basically in his hometown. It'll be so different this time. Like,
so different.
Getting that major streak off the hook has changed everything for him, I would think.
So different. And also, I Shane Lowry won there, an Irishman, won the 2019 Open there. You saw the hug between those two afterwards. Like,
yep.
That's really freeing for him. Like, oh, we can get this done, and it really means something. But it goes back to what I'm wondering about, you know, going forward for him. Is it truly freeing in a way that those things, those pressure moments that clearly affected him in the past don't affect him in the same way anymore. It's really, really hard to say until, you know, we see him at Quail Hollow with a one-shot lead on the 71st hole and see how he reacts. I mean, he's also, like, if you ever watch him play and watch him play in person, he is such a body language guy. Like, when he's playing well, that strut is going. He bounces. Is a peacock, and you know exactly. And then if it turns, like, he's like Eeyore, like his shoulders slump, and the gait is just different. I think, like, if he can get to that point where the strut is his default mode, like, that's just what comes out of him, then, you know, he's only 35. These guys bomb the ball for another decade or more. It's all still on the table for him.
Yeah, totally. Talking with our friend Barry Svrluga from the Washington Post. Read all his work at thewashingtonpost.com. Give him a follow if you'd like, at Barry Svrluga, Svrluga. Usually when we got you, we talk a bunch of different stuff, but I know you've been in Augusta for the last week, and it'd be crazy not to just talk to you about Augusta. This is perhaps a little inside baseball. I've done a little bit of work at golf tournaments, but primarily just like TV packages, which is wildly different than what you do. Can you just take us inside your day yesterday, like the physical logistics of when you're there, when you're writing? There's no electronics allowed on that course, so I imagine you have an actual notebook. You're writing everything down with an actual pen. Just let us hear how it goes.
Yeah, you're totally right. So yesterday was a great day because I ended up with a pass for a buddy of mine who had never been on the grounds before, and we got word of this about noon on Saturday, and so he hopped in the car and drove down from DC, and so I got there way earlier than
that.
I normally
That's
would
awesome.
Just to do the tour. And you know, JP, like, part of the, like, I feel like we could have started and walked that course, and we walked down 10. It's exactly the walk we did last week when I was there with you and your buddy. Like, walk down 10, see 11, and then like 12 just like opens up, and you're like, you know, if you're a golf fan, like, that is a holy bleep moment. Like, so spent the morning doing that, went inside, got ready. And then I go out with the leaders, or pick a group. And the group yesterday was obvious, in Bryson and Rory as the final group, 'cause they were up on anybody else by two shots. So, but I also know I'm not going to see everything I want to see from that vantage point. It's the only tournament where reporters don't have inside the ropes access, which is not a complaint. That's a reality. The inside the ropes stuff is so awesome at a US Open or a PGA or a British Open. But I go to this one knowing it won't be inside the ropes. And so I've got spots, particularly on the front nine, where I know, okay, I can get a good vantage point from here, or if the ball, you know, if the ball's on the right side of the fairway, I'll be here. I can watch the third hole, you know, just, I've been there enough that I know where I can see. But the reality is I can't stay out there for 18. Print newspapers might be dead, but we still publish one, and that means you have a deadline. And the other thing is, so I have to get in and start kind of organizing thoughts to write while the back nine is going on. But if it gets as crazy as it did yesterday, and that will always be remembered as Rory over Justin Rose in the playoff, but it was Rory and Justin Rose and Ludvig Åberg tied at 10 under at one point. Like, it was Bryson unraveling. There was stuff going on all over the course. P. Reed, like, bouncing one in. Like, you cannot, not only can you not see it if you're out there, you don't know what is happening. Like, you're relying on word of mouth that might be kind of sketchy. Like, oh, I was just over at 15 and I saw Patrick do this or whatever. So the sad reality is, like, the back nine on Sunday, I've got to be at my chair with my TV in the press center, monitoring it really closely and taking notes, but not seeing those golf shots live.
But, dude, it's also – golf is best on television. It's just too hard to see multiple –
See everything at one
dude,
time.
Like, that's why I mean, it's not just Augusta. Like, this LIV tournament coming up, if you're into that, or the senior PGA is going to be at Congressional in May, if you're into those things – go to a practice round and walk around and see the course. And, you know, if there's a one golfer you really want to see, go to the range and watch him or whatever, and then watch the actual tournament at home. It's so much better. Or now they got all the VIP areas and stuff. But
Well, I would say I would just have a caveat. Like, I think a Thursday or Friday can be fun too, because the field's spread out. Like, you know, there's a chance that, like, you know, this week Scotty was in the morning and Rory was in the afternoon. Like, you could see a little of, you're not as invested in the whole round. Like, it's really hard to watch a whole round of one player at a big golf tournament with a lot of fans. So there are plenty of people who leave the grounds of Augusta National on Saturday and Sunday and go back to their rental houses or their own homes and watch it on TV. And my buddy who was there for the first time yesterday, like, he had an awesome time from about 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. when they made the turn, the leaders made the turn. And then he watched the rest of it on TV because he got the full walks on it. But, you know, you want to remember those shots. You want to feel them in the moment. And a lot of it, you know, people shouldn't, anybody who gets a chance to go to Augusta who wants to go should do it, because it's just an awesome experience. But know that back nine on Sunday, unless you're like, I really want to just park myself at 16 or whatever, like, right, you're not going to see the whole tournament.
Yeah. And if you get passes for a Sunday at Augusta, go. It's still whatever you can, just go. So I'm not advocating not going. Barry, I don't know who actually, like, sets the headlines, and is it agate? What's the term for, like, the actual
agate?
Like, the actual Washington Post newspaper sports section looked terrific. And I don't know if there's a widespread panic fan setting that thing up, but they did good with Ain't Life Grand.
Ain't Life Grand worked great. And the picture, I'm looking at it right now because I still get the print edition. And the picture, of course, is of Rory's reaction, but it's early in the reaction, and he's leaning back, and his hands have just gone to his head, but his putter has been jettisoned, and it's just, so like, cool, hanging in midair. It's really, really cool. And also, guys, I would say, like, you see people celebrate championships and wins of all kinds. Rarely do you see that level of immediate emotional response to the point of, like, convulsing, because not only what it meant, but the journey to get there. Like, it was all right there, just naked for people to see. And it's another cool part of it, because he's so honest about how difficult that was and how being so good at golf, but not in those moments, had been over a decade or more. Really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, it's cool. It was that Johnny Mack on the lens?
No, unfortunately, it's probably somebody from Getty. Like, gotcha. Shooting golf tournaments is impossible, because it's as simple as, like, which way does the guy turn and say, so shoot, he faced away from me, I got his ass.
Right. All right, Barry, first time ever, I'm going to hit you with a pause, and we're going to get done here, sir. I appreciate you, man.
Sorry.
Thank you
that.
For making time for us, dude.
All right, man.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care, brother.
That's our guy, Barry Svrluga. Give him a follow at Barry Svrluga, Svrluga, columnist, Washington Post, absolutely brilliant writer, all around good dude. We come back, we got bets to make, and maybe a WNBA mock draft. B. Mitchell Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Very excited to get on the Rude Guest Hotline and talk to our friend, Mr. Jordan Reed. JR, what's up, dude? How you been?
What's going on, guys? It's always a pleasure.
I imagine you are working crazy right now, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going through my 7-round mock draft, trying to knock that out and finish up my final rankings, man. So it's fun times.
When does the 7-round drop?
April 21st.
Oh, wow. Okay. Awesome.
Monday.
So, dude, let's start at the top. It seems like it's Cam Ward, and then the big question is Shador. It seems like it's Ward, Carter, Hunter in some capacity, and then Shador floating around out there. What do you think happens?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the top, I think it's a foregone conclusion, excuse me, as far as Cam Ward going number one overall to Tennessee, just because of the need that they have at quarterback. I don't think they want to go into another year with Will Levis, and then it gets really interesting after that with Cleveland and the Giants. If they're just sticking to their board and taking the best players available, I think it will be Hunter and Carter in some way or fashion, or some order, and then after that, that's where things get really interesting as far as where Shador could end up going, especially if the Raiders or the Saints don't take a quarterback at 6 or 9. Really the only other obvious spot to me to where he could match is 21 at Pittsburgh. So it gets really interesting, not just from a quarterback perspective, but with the lack of marquee talent at the top of this year's draft, unlike what we saw in last year's draft. I think we're going to hear a lot of surprise names in round one.
Yeah, it's funny because I think the draft is like strong, especially at certain positions, but not really top heavy and not quarterback driven like so many are. And because of that, I feel like when we get to, you know, next Thursday night, there's going to be what seems like a lot of big surprises.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what happens when it's not really a quarterback driven draft, especially like what we saw last year. We had six guys go inside of the top 12. This draft class is very different. There's a lot of mix and match as far as where the strengths are in this year's position. And then the lack of marquee talent at the top of the draft is going to make for a lot of fun surprises.
Well, like the draft, the quarterback position always pushes it. But the more people get very good quarterbacks, well, let's say we have 24 great quarterbacks in the draft one year, 26 you know, already in the league. Are they going to ever start looking at other positions? Because the quarterback can't win by himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think a receiver has already become a premium position. In my honest opinion, I think receiver and defensive tackle over the past decade or so, those positions have really become at the forefront. What I call the magical four of those premium spots, mm-hmm. receiver, offensive tackle, corner, and then defensive end. Historically, those have been your four premium positions. But now defensive tackle as well as receiver have really become premium positions. That's why we're seeing these guys go so early. And it's very rare to see those guys at those positions really hit the open market, especially receiver and defensive tackle as well. So I think you're right, B. Mitch, as far as some of these other positions being prioritized, especially when we're talking about surrounding the quarterback. And for Washington's sake, they have to figure out a way to maximize Jaden Daniels just because he's not going to be cheap forever, especially if he keeps playing the way that he played during his rookie season. So I think they've done a good job of trying to maximize that window already, bringing in Laremy Tunsil, Deebo Samuel, and then some of the other additions that they have made this offseason.
So how do they maximize them in the draft? What is kind of the next step? It's 29th pick. It's hard to know what you're going to do, but what are you projecting?
The great thing for them is that they really can just really sit and wait and allow the board to fall to them, similar to what they did last year, and really just take the best player available. I don't think they need to be locked into one position, honestly, whether it's offense or defense. I think they're clear. They have a clear need at edge rusher. But then also, I would like to see them add another receiver as well. And, you know, it's not a great draft for wide receivers, but I think that really works in Washington's favor just because in previous seasons or previous years, we've seen multiple guys go inside of the top 15. But this year, we can get maybe one or two receivers go inside the top 15. So there's going to be a lot of guys on the board at the back end of the first round if Washington does want to go wide receiver, but also running back. I think running back is another area where they could look to address early as well.
Specifically, you talking Hampton there? Like, who would be there at 29?
I mean, if Hampton gets past Denver or the Chargers, depending on how they feel about Najee Harris long term, I could see it if he's there at 29. But also, one I've been talking about is Travion Henderson at number 29 overall. If they do want to take a running back, I just think he fits everything that Cliff wants in a running back. And I just think they need somebody that can be that explosive option for them, especially with B-Rob and then also Eckler entering the final season of their contract. So if they're looking for that explosive guy, somebody that's awesome in pass protection as well, I really think that's a differentiator for him in this year's class as far as like how his skill set is a little bit different from some of the other guys at the top and even guys that are in a tier below him as well. Travion is going to be able to play really early just because he can really contribute in so many different areas.
We're talking with our friend Jordan Reed from ESPN here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Of course, you can follow Jordan at Jordan_Reed, R-E-I-D. He's got his seven-round mock draft coming out on April 21st on ESPN, a ton of other draft content on ESPN.com. Dude, how likely do you think it is Washington trades out of that 29th pick?
It's really hard to say this year, honestly, JP, just because I don't think there's going to be a lot of teams really scrambling to move up the board this year unless somebody just absolutely tumbles. And, you know, I've been discussing this with my colleagues and telling everybody as well, the same player that you pick at 10 is going to be the same quality of player that you get really at 45 or 50 in this year's draft. It's just the quality of player is really the same. It's not like I hate keep bringing up last year's class, but we knew there was so much superstar talent at the front end of last year's class, and this class just really isn't like that. So if you're looking to build out your roster, this really is the class for that. So the tricky part for Washington is I don't know if anybody's going to be scrambling to move up to 29 for them to have the opportunity to even trade back.
I think you look at it, though, the quarterback always pushes. You got one quarterback in the draft and some others. I don't know many people are going to be moving that far up to get done these quarterbacks and giving you a great haul to get them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's why you're hoping if you're Washington, you're crossing your fingers that somebody has a low first round grade on Jackson Dart or, you know, Tyler Shuck or even somebody like that, one of those quarterbacks, or even Milrow, who's getting some late first round, early second round buzz. So somebody wants to come back into the first round, like Cleveland and then also the Giants, your top two picks at the top of the second round. If one of those teams want to come up to get one of those guys at the back end of the second round, the back end of the first round, that's what you're crossing your fingers for if you're Washington.
Do you think there's any way Shador, like, how far could he really slip?
I don't see him slipping past Pittsburgh, honestly. Okay. I honestly would be shocked by that if he ends up making it that far. But I think the wild card of it all is New Orleans at 9. I think it gets really interesting if he makes it past New Orleans at 9, just because until you get to that 21st spot with Pittsburgh, there really isn't a match for him as far as the team selecting him. So somebody could look to move up ahead of Pittsburgh, whether it's, you know, the Giants or Cleveland, like I mentioned, if it does go Carter and Hunter at 2 and 3. So that 9th spot is something I'm really going to be looking to see if he does make it past that, because it gets really interesting if he gets past the Saints.
It's kind of interesting in a way. It reminds me a little bit of the Dwayne Haskins draft when Washington took him. But if Washington hadn't, there were real questions about like where he might go later because there just weren't quarterback needy teams. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, that went a different direction. Honestly, even with Dwayne, though, like, there were some pretty split opinions on his. To me, Shador's tape should matter more, and it seems like it doesn't, which kind of surprises me. when he played football, he was very good at it. And I know maybe it's not the strongest arm, but it just seems like the Sanders family circus is impacting that perhaps more than it should.
Yeah, I mean, like I tell everybody, you can't have preconceived notions when you're grading a prospect.
Right.
Let's just grade the player on the field. And if we're just grading the player on the field, I definitely think Shador is a first-round worthy prospect. But when you're talking about taking a quarterback top 5, you want them to have that upper echelon, those upper echelon tools. Those are where teams really chase those tools inside of the top 5, and there's just really split opinions about that. But I mean, the accuracy, the ball placement, the poise, he has plenty of translatable traits to be a productive starter on the next level. It's just a matter of how high you view his ceiling as being on the next level.
Yeah, I get all that. I mean, I wonder about him throwing quick outs against pro corners. That's my question for that arm strength. But beyond Shador and whatever happens, that's going to be fascinating to watch. And you got Dion tweeting at the Saints and stuff. It's just crazy. But for Washington, I'm with you. I think a lot of fans would like to see a couple of home run hitters, like whether it's just true speed athletic guys at the running back position, the wideout position, either or. I think by losing Diami Brown, they've kind of lost that like real 9 route guy. Not that Terry can't be that, but you'd like somebody to complement him with that speed. Give me some day 2, day 3, whether they're backs or receivers that you like, that you think Washington might be able to kind of identify.
Those that could take it to the house?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton on day 2 and then also day 3. Jalen Noel out of Iowa State is one that I like quite a bit. That could be that home run guy down the field. You know, he's a little bit undersized. He's about 5'10". But he's real rocked up, has a real rocked up, solid body, really good at the catch point as well, catches everything. I thought he was really good at the Senior Bowl, one of the more productive players there, and he really silenced a lot of critics during his performance there as well. I think he ends up going probably late second, early third, so they may have to target him a little bit earlier if what they want to, if they do end up wanting to get him. So Jalen Noel is one. Ty Felton out of Maryland.
Yeah,
somebody
buddy.
I have a 4th round grade on. he's somebody that's really exciting. He got off to a really good start last season, and then they had some inconsistencies at quarterback.
Yeah.
And, you know, that caused his numbers to taper off a little bit. So he's definitely one. But, you know, if you're looking for somebody on day three, Dante Thornton Jr. out of Tennessee is somebody that's really intriguing
guy,
as well. Yeah, I mean, big guy, 6'4", 205 pounds, ran 4.3 at the combine.
Run.
So he has all the things that you want. He definitely can run. If you're looking for somebody that can be that down-the-field weapon, he definitely was that in Tennessee's offense. So he'll probably end up going in the fourth or the fifth round. So somebody that they want to target, you know, early to mid day three, I definitely think he's going to be there on the board. And then just running backs. I mean, this running back class is loaded, guys. I have 31 draftable grades right now, and it's very reminiscent to that 2017 class. You know, we don't have the high-end marquee talent that that one had. And if you remember, that was the Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon, Alvin Kamara, the list goes on and on with that class as far as how loaded it was. I think the depth is very similar to that class. And there was 30 running backs drafted in that one. I think we could get at least 30 drafted in this year's class. But if you're looking for somebody that has some speed, Bashaul Tutin is one of Virginia Tech. I think he'll probably end up going in third or the fourth round. He's somebody that's really intriguing. Just has to clean up the ball security. Jaden Blue out of Texas is somebody that's really exciting as well, that zone scheme runner that can be that dynamic guy as far as being a home run hitter. And then one of my favorites is Breshard Smith out of SMU. He reminds me a lot of Tyrone Tracy, and we saw what he was able to do during his first season with the Giants. So they can have their pick of the litter as far as what type of bat that they want, but if they're looking for that home run hitter that can create those explosive plays, there's going to be a lot of guys probably in that third or fourth round range.
Third or fourth round? That's cool.
Question for you, specific to the 2017 draft. Obviously, that was loaded with guys we knew from incredible college careers. Is Jenty considered a brighter prospect than any of those guys?
I mean, Fournette and McCaffrey were dudes, man. And I mean, Jenty's a dude, but Fournette was so good, and McCaffrey was really good as well, just because of his versatility. And I think Jesse, he's not as good of a prospect as, you know, Bijan and Saquon, in my opinion.
Okay.
But he's a tier below that. But I mean, he's a special prospect as well, just not on the same tier as those guys, in my opinion.
Gotcha.
Once he get out there, it's gonna be hard to catch him.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
Hell yeah.
Well, dude, thank you so much for making time for
appreciate
us, man.
You, brother.
I know you're swamped. I appreciate it, dude.
No problem. Thank you, guys, as always.
All right. That's our guy, Jordan Reed. Give him a follow at Jordan_Reed, R-E-I-D. Make sure you check out all his work at ESPN.com. I want to talk about some of these later round receivers and backs that Jordan has his eye on. Plus, Barstool Nate joins us at 11. Finley, 106.7, The Fan. All right. Things got heated last night in the group text thread. The group text thread is me, big-eared blogger, Brian Mitchell, Jim Andrew Mullins, the 10th, a.k.a. Landfill, a.k.a. Professor Landini, Jeff Too Funny, Jeff Walker, and White Brian, Brian Hawk. So, the five...
Yeah, man, you... that's a little nasty.
Isn't that how you pronounce it?
Hauk.
Hauk.
Brian Hauk.
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 You sound like you're doing Hawk Tua.
Yeah,
you sound like you're doing Hawk Tua.
Brian, good one right there, dog.
Okay, so.
Oh, boy.
Here's how it all went down. How did the conversation even start about Hawk Tua?
I don't know. I just saw it. And then I just. I can tell you how it started. Yesterday.
Yesterday
I kind of went to, I wanted a half smoke, right? So I was like, I'm going to go get me a half smoke. But when I was in the place, I seen a Bratsworth that you could have got too.
$2. Oh, I see. Now I remember now.
Yeah, so I was like.
What'd you just call that?
Ain't it called a Bratsworth?
Just a
Bratwurst.
Bratwurst.
Bratwurst, Bratsworth, tomato, tomato.
Not saying.
So I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going to get it. It got sauerkraut on it. I was just talking about this the other day with Landini and the boys. So I found out it was cabbage. I was like, okay, I'm going to try it. It was the worst thing ever. It was the worst thing ever. I don't encourage no one to try it. Stay far away from it.
I think sauerkraut's good.
I also like sauerkraut.
Y'all are also crazy. So I mean, that, Jeff, you crazy, so you should like it then.
Nah, dude, like, it was so bad, B and JP, that, like, when I, like, tasted it.
Maybe it could have been bad. So
my mouth started to burn a little bit. So I was like, yo, is this supposed to be like this? So I started Googling. I'm like, yo, will sauerkraut make your mouth burn, or is that an allergic reaction? It will make your mouth burn because it's acidic. But it was just horrible. And which led us to B-Hawk said, that's top three toppings. And I was like, no way.
I like it with a bratwurst. I wouldn't eat it. I don't eat it on a dog.
I like it better with a brat, but I like it on a dog too. Yeah. All right, so let's get down to it. So we all have our three best hot dog toppings and then the worst, right? Mm-hmm. So should we do all our best and then worst, or do it all at once?
However you want to do it, man.
All right, B, you start. You can do best.
Mine in no particular order. I like jalapenos, I like chili, and I like cheese. Normally, I like the jalapeno with the cheese.
Now, the rule is, like, you can't, like, some people like a chili cheese dog, but those are separate toppings.
I normally buy the dog with the chili and the cheese in it, and then I just throw, with the jalapeno and the cheese in it, and I just drop the chili on top.
Those are the brats. Those are good.
That's a regular hot dog.
Okay. I like those Johnsonville cheese brats. Those are good.
And now my absolute worst, mustard.
Mustard.
Yeah, it takes completely away from the taste of what I'm eating. And if I'm eating hot dog with some bread, I want to be able to taste that. Just like when I eat steak. If I got to put steak sauce on, your damn steak is no good.
I largely agree with you, especially on the steak sauce. If I'm at a steak restaurant, if I'm in a steakhouse and it, like, gets served with A1, like, I'll have the chicken, dog. are you anti-mustard in all capacities or just with dogs?
Well, just like with that, because, like, it's just overpowering to me. You know, like, well, if I use any mustard, I make, like, a little – I like to do sauces. So I'll take some mayo, I put a little mustard in, a little ketchup, and I drop some barbecue sauce, and then I put, like, a little spread. But I'll drop the cheese in it first, put the dog so the cheese can melt.
You know, I like the nacho cheese. I do it like that. I like melted cheese on it.
But
like,
I'm not just, I see people just load it up with nothing but mustard and onions. Hey, bro, whatever you like, but your bread got to be kicking after that. Well, like you got a black belt in karate.
I don't think there's a good post-hot dog breath, regardless of what's on the hot dog. You can eat a plain hot dog, bro. And
onion,
your breath's
onion
gonna
and
be
mustard
gross.
Just, it's the burp. Onion and mustard get you, dog.
That's a tough burp. All right, White Brian, you seem very opinionated about ketchup. Why don't you go?
Yeah, tell us what you say, B.
There is a correct answer to this question. A hot dog is supposed to have mustard, relish, and sauerkraut on it.
Mustard?
Those three together?
Yes.
No.
No chance Rose is already kissing you after that.
I was going to say, I already have stomach problems.
I see why
enough.
Your dog left the house.
See what mustard, the dog relish, and sauerkraut?
That's why the dog said, you know what? I'm moving to grandma's house.
Yo, I like relish and sauerkraut, but that sounds so gross, dog. Like, I that's a lot. You got a lot going on there.
Don't knock it till you try it.
What is your worst condiment for a hot dog?
Ketchup does not belong on a hot dog.
All right. Can we get to the bottom of this? Who is the great arbiter of hot dog rules? That, like, because I've heard this talk that people are like, oh, you're a child for putting ketchup on a hot dog. Where did that come from? Because bleep
you
these
eat
people.
Cheese pieces and you eat Liberty cheeseburger. You are a child. But ultimately, let's see. This is back to what you were talking
your
about earlier.
Your anti-cheese pizza stance is bizarre.
Whatever, man. I want a whole damn piece. I don't want no damn cheese. You say you can have an opinion. So you don't want a I just think just putting ketchup on bread and a wiener is not cool.
He dropped a wiener.
Yeah, I dropped a wiener in there. Wiener, whatever you want to call it. I'm like, okay then. That's just like all these people that put ketchup on eggs. Ugh.
It's kind of good here and there.
Nah.
That's just kind of good here and there. I don't do it all the time. So, but
I don't understand the hot dog one, but the eggs one I completely understand.
But
ketchup should not be on eggs.
But here's my thing. Yeah. There is like a legitimate like body of school of thought about that is anti-ketchup on hot dogs. I just don't understand where that stems from. Like people want to look down on you for putting ketchup on a hot dog.
It's a little weird, I think.
Are you aware of what we're eating? We're eating raccoon bits. Like, yeah, who's pearl clutching about hot
dogs? It's a little weird, dog. Hot dog, yeah. A little weird.
I don't think so. Okay, all right, Jeffrey.
Okay, number one, mustard. And it has to be cold. It got to be cold. I love cold mustard on a hot dog, bro.
Cold mustard on a hot dog?
If you put it on a hot dog, it's going to be hot. No, nah, nah. You ever had cold ketchup on hot French fries? It's beautiful, bro.
I don't hate that.
Then, B, you may hate this, but onions is my number two, bro. A glizzy with some onions or a half smoke or a brat with mustard and onions, it's amazing. Number three.
It's disgusting.
I got to go with the chili. And for real, can I give an honorable mention? Can I get a, because I got to have the cheese with it, bro. I got to.
It's your dog.
Especially with.
You can't get chili and cheese.
That's why I said honorable mention.
Honorable mention.
But I'm telling you, a nice mustard, onion, and chili dog. Woo! That's a good thing to eat, especially fresh off the
chili
grill.
On it, you don't need no damn extra stuff on
it. Isn't there onions in chili most of the time?
Yeah. It's cooked away, though.
I would say most of the times when I order a dog, like, it's fresh chopped onions. Yes, your breath got to stick.
Well, JP not eating that.
Yeah, you gotta keep the gum
dog,
with you.
I'd rather jump off the roof of this office building.
I told you. Chow.
Yeah, chow.
I hate onions. You hate stuff? I'm allowed to hate stuff?
Now.
What's your worst, Jeff?
Sauerkraut. Sauerkraut is horrible. It should not be put on a hot dog. It shouldn't even be fermented. Just cook the cabbage
regular.
That's
why you don't like it.
No. I like kimchi. I like kimchi, but that sauerkraut that I had yesterday.
It's a little spicy for you. It was tasting a little spicy. If you don't like spicy food, we feel real.
If I could put what it tastes like, B. Just imagine.
No, you don't want to tell me
that. You ever been to a nail salon or you ever smelt like your woman when she like painting her nails?
I've been to a nail salon.
But what I'm telling you is that's probably sauerkraut could have gone bad. Could have been sitting there a little bit for you.
Yeah.
It's not that horrible, though.
I'm getting a ton of tweets. I'm getting a ton of texts.
Rather eat coleslaw.
Phone lines. I love coleslaw. Phone lines are going to be open here. 800-636-1067.
I know JP would love coleslaw.
800-636-1067. Yo, Nats Park used to have a buffalo dog that they covered in hot sauce and then put coleslaw on top of it. It was banging. I don't know if they still have that. All right, so we're through three people here. B-Bitch. His three favorite toppings, jalapenos, chili, and cheese. His worst topping, mustard. White Brine is three favorites, mustard, relish, and sauerkraut. His worst is ketchup because he's judgy. Jeff Too Funny specifies cold mustard, onions, and then chili. His worst is sauerkraut. Jeff also did not follow the rules and has an honorable mention of cheese. Professor, me or you, buddy?
I can go. I'll go next.
Okay.
All right. My top three toppings are mustard, onions, and cheese. And then my least favorite is tomatoes.
Oh, no. Hot dog?
Yeah.
We should have a conversation about Chicago.
Who put tomatoes on hot dogs?
Diced tomatoes?
Dude, have you ever heard of these
Chicago monsters
dogs?
In Chicago?
I can't stand Chicago people. But first of all, who outside of Chicago puts a tomato on a damn hot dog?
Yo, this is a thing, though. Let me read this to you. This is from AI on Google, okay? So maybe it's a Chicago-style hot dog is an all-beef frankfurter served on a poppy seed bun with yellow mustard, relish, onions, tomatoes, pickles, peppers, and celery salt. But gross.
Nah.
I don't want any of that. Yo, it comes out looking, have you ever seen one?
Wait. Is this cooked on it or is it cold? They're trying to make the thing more like a damn hamburger.
They've been doing this for hundreds of years out there.
Yeah, but see, when you just get it, you start liking it and you start favoring it. But people outside of there can't like that.
I don't even know how you eat that thing. How do you take a bite of that?
Mm-hmm.
You use a knife and fork?
You have to. Landfill, how you eat that thing? How you open your mouth that wide?
I also don't want a poppy seed bun on a hot dog. I want like a potato roll.
Celery salt is pretty good, though.
All right. You want mine?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's get yours.
Number one, and it's not freaking close, Landfill. Write it in all caps. Ketchup. The absolute best thing to put on a hot dog is ketchup.
Absolutely not.
That's absolutely wrong.
It is the best thing to put on a hot dog when you're four.
Yeah.
Straight up glizzy gang, ketchup me.
Yeah, you cover me in ketchup and lick
it off my body.
Every time I've seen a ketchup on a hot dog, it has been for kids.
And me.
The little bird that, well, we already call you a kid. You're a kid.
Well, little cheeseburger.
Ketchup is the one seed.
No, ain't no damn way.
Two seed, kraut. Ketchup and kraut, bang it.
Do you go ketchup and sauerkraut?
Damn right I do.
That's a horrific combo.
That's only if I'm willing to have terrible breath and
heartburn
for the rest of the day.
Yeah. Hey,
but some days you just dive in.
Kid.
Well, I don't know any kids that like sauerkraut. Sauerkraut and ketchup is just diabolical.
Most people get heartburn when they eat stuff they're not supposed to be eating.
Kid. I ain't gonna lie, JP.
Yo, adults get heartburn. Kids don't get heartburn. When I was a kid, I could eat anything.
I don't know.
You've never seen the commercial for heartburn?
Everybody gets something today. Today, kids are different than the ones that we grew up. Because kids, everybody learns to something. You wouldn't allergic to a damn thing when you were young, right?
I had pollen always.
Pollen alert? That's an effect. That's not a not.
Pollen is 100% an allergy.
Isn't that heartburn? Acid reflux?
Yeah.
Kids have that all day. Okay. You know, I'm just saying, like back then, man, you could walk around and do everything. You're not gonna die if you go out in pollen.
Right. You're talking about like
if you
peanut allergies or
right
thing
now,
and everything.
Kid, you got problems.
My third, before I was so rudely interrupted.
You interrupt people every damn day. What the hell are you talking about?
Melted cheese, like nacho cheese. Whatever that term is, that's the kind of cheese I want. Cheese whiz, perhaps, whatever that is.
Nah, cheese whiz.
I've seen people put shredded cheese on a hot dog. I think that's a little weird. It's got to be a cheese sauce.
The worst, I mean, I have like 100 things for worst, but onions, certainly. And if I can, I would just say the entire Chicago dog principle. The entire principle of a Chicago hot dog.
So Jeff and JP didn't follow the rules.
Yeah.
J-Dogs forever.
J-Dogs forever.
Hey, look. JP can always tell you why somebody else can have an opinion, but when he says it, nobody can have an opinion.
What do you mean?
The quintessential hot dog topping.
Onions are disgusting in all forms.
Delicious.
When a child's getting baptized and you get asked, do you denounce Satan in all forms?
Especially the right onions.
That should be, do you denounce onions in all forms? Okay? They're disgusting.
You just don't eat raw onions because you eat onions.
It's one thing if they're cooked, but raw onions.
Yeah, you don't eat raw onions because I know I put extra onions every time I cook something and y'all know you're going to eat it.
All right. People are calling. People have hot dog opinions. I don't understand why people hate ketchup. I also tweeted this. A lot of people have a lot of opinions about my rankings. Ketchup, by far, the number one seed of what should be served on a hot dog. Let's start with Big G in Sterling.
G, you might curse on this one.
Yeah, don't curse, dude. Give us your best and worst glizzy gang.
No, I ain't going to curse, y'all. I ain't going to curse. Look, hot dog. It got to be coleslaw and mustard. Now, a bratwurst.
Coleslaw and mustard?
Bratwurst is different. A bratwurst, it got to be kraut, the kraut salt, and mustard. Now, on a high smoke, it can be onions and mustard. But ketchup on a hot dog, absolutely not.
I realize you want mustard on everything.
Yeah, dog.
Ketchup is where it's at. Check this out real quick. Bedroom. Y'all put your mind in the bedroom. Don't no man like no ketchup on your hot dog.
Hold on. I got where you're coming from.
What?
We gonna move on from that conversation.
I explain to you later, Jay.
Yo, Big G, when he's not dropping an MF, says some stuff. All right, the amount of comments I've gotten on social media are significant. Tailgate Ted, this seems impossible.
What?
This does not count as a topping.
What he said?
Tailgate Ted says pulled pork is his favorite topping on a hot dog.
Tailgate Ted, y'all trying to make up all these new sandwiches and stuff. That's not really a topping. That's just like an additive.
He's saying pulled pork and coleslaw are my favorite toppings on a hot dog. Pulled pork and coleslaw is its own sandwich.
That's a whole new meal.
And, Landfill, coleslaw on top of a pulled pork sandwich, terrific. All right.
I'll leave that for
you. We're talking glizzies. You want us not talking football? Glizzy talk on The Fan.
What up? What's happening? Lynnell Willingham, Toby Altizer here with you on B. Mitch and Finley right here on The Fan. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app as well. Giving away Caps tickets once an hour, so make sure you keep it locked on The Fan all day long for that. Do that starting at 10:20, 11:20, 12:20, 1:20, all the way up until 5 o'clock. So make sure you keep it locked on The Fan all day long to get a pair of tickets we're giving away, Landfill. Pair of tickets to go see the Caps and their opening round playoff series starting Monday against the Canadiens. Toby, what's going on, brother, man?
What's going on, man? It's great to be here. Always great to fill in on a Friday. Excited. Going to get off at 2 o'clock today, head over to Baltimore, watch a little baseball tonight because doesn't seem like the Nats are going to play.
Well, yeah.
Colorado,
very
snow in the forecast.
Yeah.
You know what? I can't tell if this is a good thing or a bad thing for the Nats. They did not look good in their two series on the road.
No, they have
and
not.
And Colorado is the worst team in baseball right now. I can't tell if the reset is good or bad because maybe they need to face Colorado right now.
Yeah, it's always good to have a bounce back series, so to speak. But think about, this is what's so great about baseball season, I think. You can look at it in so many different stretches. Because I think coming out of that Dodgers series, the feeling around this team was a heck of a lot different than what it is right now. The bats have kind of gotten cold here again, something that was a real issue all of last year. The injuries slowly but surely.
Yeah, since 2019, by the way.
Well, yeah. The injuries slowly but surely beginning to pile up for the group as well. So it's going to be interesting. We'll get your thoughts on the suspension. The suspensions.
Bull crap, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
That's your early gauge on it?
Yeah, real quick, though, uh-huh. I wanted to check in with Landfill. I know this is early to check in with Landfill, but I wanted to check in. His boy was on the mound the other day, Patrick Corbin, and he pitched well. He pitched well for the Rangers, went 5 1/3, gave up just one run. But I need to know what Landfill's thoughts are because Patrick Corbin almost didn't make this start, Lynnell, because he was bit by a venomous spider before his start and was almost unable to walk in the clubhouse. So, Landfill, is Patrick Corbin now Spider-Man?
He might be. Maybe that was the secret.
Yeah, he doesn't need the sticky stuff anymore on the mound because he's Spider-Man.
Whoa.
He's got He's going to have even better breaking stuff now, regardless.
Spin rate. Get that spin rate up.
That's how you do it right there. Turn into Spider-Man.
Yeah, who doesn't love high spin rates?
I would love for some Nats pitchers to have some good spin rates. Be a little more effective.
Make sure you keep it locked, like we said, all day long here on 106.7 The Fan. We're giving away Caps Game 1 tickets today every hour at 20 minutes past the hour until 5 o'clock. Be caller number 9 to 800-636. Okay. All right. We go from that to this. We're pivoting.
Let's pivot.
Let's talk about the Caps. So I was listening earlier on the way in as the Junks were talking about, do you want Charlie Lindgren in that or do you want Logan Thompson in that? And I think the way, first of all, I'm glad that we can, and this is going to sound very snarky of me, I'm glad we can get back to the hockey. I'm glad the chase is over. I'm glad regular season's now done. Ovi lit the lamp once again last night for goal number 897. But they lost, Toby. 5-2 loss against Pittsburgh team that's not very good. They're not playing their best hockey going into the postseason. I think we can all agree with that. Another, just like we talked about with the Nationals, injuries kind of starting to mount up for this group as well. But I think going into the postseason at home, knowing the type of environment that we're going to have Monday night at Cap One, how easy is it for you to put the failures of the past 2-3 weeks behind them? Because if you're looking at this thing from a big picture standpoint, their offense, hot, one of the best in all of the NHL, averaging the second most goals per game. Defensively, when Logan Thompson is in net, they are one of the more formidable defenses in all of hockey. Can they put the struggles of the past couple of weeks behind them?
I would think that they can, but I don't know how easy it is to flip a switch like so many people are expecting, right?
For sure.
And I think a lot of people have brought this up. That's why there is concern going into this playoff series. It's one thing to go in and you're hobbling into the playoffs like they were last year, and really the expectations were nothing, and then they found a way in, and it's like they get bounced in a sweep, and it is what it is. It's disappointing, but kind of is what it is. You're the one seed in the Eastern Conference. Yeah. There's no low expectations here.
Not at all.
You have to at least win this series, maybe even get to the Eastern Conference Finals to feel like you have accomplished what you needed to accomplish. And so I don't know how easy it is to flip the switch. Like, if you go back and one of the last couple of games they had where, you know, they were able to score 4 goals in the second period against the Hurricanes, or 3 goals in the second period.
You see these offensive flurries.
Yeah, like a couple of games ago, like you see them at times look really, really good, like the team we saw all year. And then you've seen them at times go back to the team we saw down the stretch that was not in a rhythm and struggling. Like, you watched last night, and I understand that they didn't have their A-plus goaltender in net, and I understand that it's kind of a tune-up for the playoff of sorts, but they didn't look as sharp. I think against the Islanders the other night, they looked much better, looked much more like the team that we were used to see, but that's been less of what we've seen over the last month and a half or so. And so I don't know if there's something where you could just flip a switch. I would like to think that there is, and this team, when everything's kind of rolling, listening to Brent Johnson on with the guys the other day talking about it, feeling like if this team plays with a chip on their shoulder and plays with a little bit of an extra pizzazz, I don't know that there's a team that's better than them in hockey. But can they easily just turn that back on? I don't know that it's just as simple as playoff time, flip the switch.
The good thing I would say is, right, they got a lot of guys on this roster that have had their fair share of moments in the playoffs. And there's one guy in particular that I'm circling going, you know what? You talk about extra, you know, bouncing your step, extra pizzazz, extra physicality. Look no further than Tommy Wilson. If I need someone to come out and light a fire under this group, I think Tom Wilson is going to be the guy for them this postseason. Moving forward, though, I'm the concern for me is in net. Like, that's what is the health of Logan Thompson? Like, that to me is the risk here. Game one to me is so important, and I compare the NHL playoffs to the NBA playoffs because they both go 7 games, right? That tone-setting game one to me is so, so, so important. So I understand like the thought process of, well, do you let Logan get healthy for game two? No. If he's ready to go game one, put him in that game one. You need to get off to a fast start in this series.
Yeah, I understand that logic. I almost
especially
feel
with
like,
how they've been playing.
Absolutely. And I don't think there's any question that if you're asking just Capitals fans around who they feel more comfortable in net with, it's Logan Thompson over Charlie Lindgren.
Yeah.
But I think it is difficult when this guy has not played in so long to just expect him to hop back in net in game one and look like the Logan Thompson we saw for a majority of the season. So for me, I kind of think you go with Chucky game one. If you can get game one, I think it's a little bit different if you lose game one. But assuming you win game one, I would maybe try Logan Thompson in game two. The tough part here is, Linnell, you know, at some point, you're going to have to throw Logan Thompson back in net because he is the better goaltender.
Yeah.
And are you better off just maybe eating a game in games one or two by throwing him out there, and then by game three or game four, he feels like he's more locked in? The problem is, like you said, it's such an up and down. You want to set the tone in game one. What happens if Logan Thompson isn't in form in game one and you're struggling, you're giving up easier goals? It's just, I don't know that there's a right answer here. I think this is why, you know, Coach Carbs is going to have a really difficult decision to make. Kind of trust whatever he's going to do. Personally, I think for game one, I'm probably rolling with Charlie Lindgren just because he's been on the ice more recently and has played.
Yeah, look, if they're going to score, if they're going to have 3-goal periods, I think it doesn't matter who's in net, right? If the offense is going to be humming the way it was for a majority of the season, then I think ultimately here in the first round, they'll be fine, but you still have your concerns. This group hasn't won a playoff series since they won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So, like, to act as if the playoffs have been kind to the Capitals would be crazy here. I do think, and somebody that maybe follows this a little closer than me can correct me if I'm wrong here, this Caps team feels different than those teams of the past, meaning this group can score.
Yeah, I mean,
and like they score in bunches. And I feel like, you know, it's obviously super important to have a reliable guy in net. But if you can score 3-4 goals at a time, then I feel like you could beat anybody.
Yeah, and this is a different group, especially from the ones that you've seen since the Stanley Cup run. It's just different because, like you said, they're able to score. What the Capitals front office has done a fantastic job of, where it was looking a little bit bleak, Linnell, of what's the post-Ovi era going to look like.
Sure.
And suddenly, you lock up Chychrun. Dylan Strome looks awesome. You've locked up both goaltenders. And Ryan Leonard looks like the real deal when he's come up and played. Like, suddenly, this team looks like it's set for the future, and they're playing well right now. So they've done a really good job of that. And I think that everybody, when they're playing so well, this team reminds me a little bit of what we saw with the Commanders this year, where the sum of their parts is obviously, you know, maybe not as much as some other teams. But the way that they play together.
They love each other.
When they play their best hockey together, it's almost unstoppable. So that's the big thing, is can you get that chemistry back? They need Protas back out on the ice. He was huge this season. But if they can get out there and they play their best hockey, they're going to be tough to beat. But it's just assuming that they can flip that switch and get back to what we saw earlier in the season.
I'm glad you mentioned chemistry. It feels like it's something that isn't talked about a lot. I know this Commanders season, we talked about it a lot more because it felt like that was the driving force behind their success. 4-win team going to an NFC championship game. You can say the same about this Caps group.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, from the bands that make her dance to, I mean, all of it, there are rallying cries within that locker room. I think having, you know, veterans like Tom Wilson and Alex Ovechkin obviously make everything, you know, easier, and it mends things for you. But credit to Coach Carbs as well, man.
He is like, so good. And I don't think people have talked enough about this, that I honestly think the thing that has fueled the Capitals the most this season is what happened last year once they got into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because they were thrilled to get there, and then they were out as quick as they got there. 4-0 sweep by the Rangers.
They earned it down the stretch to get there.
They
but
did.
Yes.
They did. You get it, you know, for guys like Ovi, Wilson, guys that have been there before, just to get into the playoffs means nothing.
Right.
Because they've been there before. You got to win a playoff series. So I think Ovi came back more motivated. Look how hot he started the year compared to what happened last year when he started the year slow. So I think that motivated this Capitals team and really brought them together. And then you see them shoot up to be first in the Eastern Conference this year.
You mentioned Alex Ovechkin. Lights the lamp last night for .897. I wanted him to get to .900 before the season ended, but obviously a little bit of a drought as you get geared up for the postseason. If he is able to secure another Stanley Cup title, that's two in his illustrious career. You have the all-time goal-scoring record. The hell with the D.C. sports conversation. He is atop of any list in this town, as far as I'm concerned.
He's already at the top, in my opinion.
Based off of the longevity and then the goal-scoring record. If he's able to get two Stanley Cups, how much differently do we talk about him in terms of greatest athletes of all time? You know how I feel about LeBron and Tom Brady because of their success in the latter portion of their career. Alex Ovechkin fits the bill perfectly. Do we talk about him maybe being on the Mount Rushmore of greatest sports athletes ever?
Yeah, I don't know that he gets there. I'm not one that can speak great on hockey history. I know that Gretzky's still the greatest. I don't think there's any question about that. I think it helps his legacy against Crosby. You know, I saw a Pittsburgh fan.
I mean, is that really even a thing?
Well, I saw a Pittsburgh fan tweeting last night, and the way, screw the Penguins. But, you know, it was cool seeing the moment last night where they gave him a Rolex.
I saw that because of you.
I don't know how much, I don't know how I feel about that, because screw the Penguins for life.
Yeah.
But, you know, a Penguins fan was saying, like, Ovi is the greatest goal scorer of all time.
Yes.
There's no question. I don't care who you are, whether you're a Pens fan, whether you're a Rangers fan, it does not matter. You know that Ovi's the best goal scorer. Is he a better player than Sidney Crosby? I'm going to say yes. I'm also biased, but
well,
I think
if he
can win a second cup,
that was the argument.
Yeah, why not? Like, you know, Crosby can do maybe a little bit more, but when you are the best at something, you are the best goal scorer of all time. To me, I don't even care what his legacy is, because I know what he means to this city, where he is so important that growing up, hockey wasn't something that really mattered that much. But I always knew about Ovi.
Exactly.
And
that's why
people in this area didn't play hockey. And now you see little kids all over the place. You know, I know Grant's kids playing hockey, right? Like, little kids are playing hockey. That wasn't the case before Ovi. It's not like the Capitals just came into existence when Ovi got here. So I know what he means here.
I think we can call him the most transcendent athlete of in the DMV in terms of maybe history. I told the story when he broke the record. I remember I grew up in a Dallas Cowboys household. And think about how young we are. We watched the Redskins be terrible our entire life. I was told.
That changes so much of my thoughts on you, by the way.
Thank you. I'm a soldier, man. I stuck it out through and through. I was raised in a Cowboys household. I stuck it out even though we lost every other Sunday. And, you know, I was a diehard Wizard fan as well. So I was always told, now the Redskins never going to be good. The Wizards never going to be good. This is a hockey town. I said, what? What is hockey? May have been the first question that I asked. What is hockey?
Yeah.
Obviously, though, when you see those red Alex Ovechkin number 8 jerseys around town, man, it becomes something that's bigger than you. And I think as a sports fan, I couldn't call myself a sports fan if I didn't appreciate what he's been able to accomplish. That being said, they got to get back on track here.
Like, yeah, 100%.
This, going out in the first round, I feel like puts a wet blanket over how special of a season this was.
You nailed it right there, because if they have the same cap stuff that we've seen in the past, where right. it's disappointment after disappointment in the playoffs, with the exception of 2018,
yeah.
you can't have that. This season has been so special, and if they were able to cap it off with a cup run, it'd go down as an all-timer in DC sports history, something that was maybe the most memorable of any of them. I know the Super Bowls mean more. I wasn't around for those, obviously, but I know the Super Bowls
are
always going to... Yeah, exactly. They're always going to be transcendent because they're Super Bowls and it's a different sport. But
yeah.
can you just imagine, Linnell, the craziness that we had this year where this team went from being a barely get into the playoff team to they look awesome to Ovi's looking great. Ovi's injured. He comes back, still breaks the record. They're the top seed in the Eastern Conference, and then they go on a run. I think this season has a chance to be an all-timer if it isn't already. The big part is you cannot get into the playoffs now against the Canadiens and crap the bed. You just can't.
Not something that would be acceptable for this group. Game one is Monday. Make sure you keep it locked on the Fan all afternoon long. Be caller number 9-800-636-1067 to win a pair of tickets to game one for the 2025 playoffs with the Washington Capitals Monday, April 21st versus Montreal at Cap One Arena. For tickets and more event information, visit thefandc.com. Caller number 9, the time is now. Call in to get those Caps tickets. We'll take a quick timeout. We come back, we will pivot from the ice to the construction site. Big news on RFK comes your way next on the Fan.